Hi, my name is Lauren Kufler, and I'm going to be giving you an informal walkthrough of my pre-doc project, where I'm using a unique set of diverse samples to ask some questions about gene regulation and genome structure. I'm going to be available during the Q&A session, so feel free to stop by and ask questions there, or shoot me an email at lauren.kufler@jax.org. That's jax.org. So, I work at the Jackson Laboratory, which is known to most for the inbred mouse lines it produces. Since the early 2000s, our research labs have also developed a number of highly characterized outbred mouse populations, including the Diversity Outbred Mouse Project, also known as the DO. And DO mice are all randomly mated heterozygous individuals started from 8 genetically diverse inbred strains. We know their genetics, we have genome sequencing pipelines to do high-quality genotyping on each individual, and we can use them as a starting point for lots of new projects. A company called Predictive Biology worked with Jax to create diversity outbred embryonic stem cell lines, 176 of which have been genotyped and run through bulk RNA-seq and ATAC-seq open chromatin assay. So, the lab I'm working in is very interested in complex genetic traits, interactions between genes, and how to integrate multi-omics data like this to look at complex interactions between genotype and epigenetic elements that might affect gene transcription. And as I started thinking about how to tackle this, the obvious first question was, where do I start? Well, a gene's local regulatory area is where you tend to find the vast majority of regulatory factors that directly affect it. But then I started asking, hang on, how are we defining local? And as anybody who's looked at the literature has found out, the definition is pretty arbitrary. People generally set their boundaries at 100 to 500 kb out from the gene, which is about as far as people tend to find interactions. But there's very little talk about what the actual biological basis for those numbers is. So, that's how I came to the big two questions of the project thus far. Can we use our data to infer the presence of genetic-epigenetic interactions that regulate gene expression? And can we find some biological basis for the local area that constrains these? The answer to both seems to be yes so far, and I'll give you a quick walkthrough of why. So, to search for evidence of genetic-epigenetic interactions, we fed our data through a regression model, which is reproduced on the poster here in the first column. Basically, for each possible combination of genetic variant and open chromatin attack peak, our model determines if either of these affect gene expression. Maybe just one of them does, maybe none, maybe both, or maybe both working together in combination. That last category are the ones we're interested in. While we were verifying that the results of these models were better than random, we noticed a couple things. First, we were in fact seeing interactions popping up. Cool. Second, as expected, these interacting elements tended to be close to the genes they affect on a scale that closely matched a genome structural feature we already know about, topologically associated domains. Now, I've had some people tell me that when they hear TADs get mentioned, they want to run away screaming, so I'll do my best to make them less scary here. TADs are loops of open chromatin that tend to be more open than average. There are a bunch of different precise definitions of what TADs are. I'm using the definition that says they're pinned together at CTCF binding sites, and their locations seem to be stable across cell types, conserved across species, and have an average length of about 1.09 megabases, which made them a good length to contain or constrain a gene's local area. So, to check whether TADs really were contributing something here, we took an aggregate view of the border area of all TADs, which you can see in the graph in the second column. This is showing where attack peaks involved in interactions fall relative to the TAD boundary, with areas outside of the TADs on the left and inside of the TADs on the right. We see an obvious difference here, which can't be explained by the distribution of attack peaks alone. And this is just for interactions that hit a p-value cutoff of 1 times 10 to the negative 16th, literally as small as my calculations could keep track of. So, what else do we see about how interactions are arranged within TADs? Well, since TADs are big loops of chromatin, the start and end points of the TAD may be a megabase apart on the linear DNA sequence, but right next to each other in the 3D chromatin context. So, what happens if we look at the local area of genes in the context of that loop? Are there bits of interacting DNA that people may have missed before because they fell outside of a 500 kb cutoff? Our data suggests that yes, that's likely. When we look at how interaction counts arrange themselves around genes in these loops, what seems to matter most is how close the locus is to the gene within the TAD loop, regardless of how far away it is on the linear sequence. Stuff that's close in the loop interacts a lot, then it trails off as you go around to the opposite side, and we're showing this in the third column of the poster here. In genes that are close to the boundary of a TAD, that could mean that researchers are missing interactions that take place way down at the other end of the TAD. So, three practical takeaways for researchers. First, we're seeing strong evidence of genetic variants and epigenetic factors interacting to affect gene expression. And there's some data I didn't have space for which indicates that these interactions take up a chunk of about half of all highly significant regression models we identified. So if you've found a promising variant but attempts to recapitulate its behavior in another tissue culture or model organism have failed, that may not mean that you were wrong. Different model systems may have different patterns of open chromatin that are blocking the effect of your variant. Second, if you don't have TAD data and you want just a hard numerical cutoff for how far you should search for regulatory actions from your gene, you have a 2.84 megabase window to cover if you want to pick up 95% of all intra-TAD regulatory areas, according to where I found the interactions. And this has a bit of a skew to it, so you want to search 1.29 megabases upstream from the gene promoter and 1.56 megabases downstream. In future, I'm hoping to answer some more questions about genetic-epigenetic interactions. First, given what we've seen in the graph in column 2, can we identify TAD boundaries via interaction data? The CTCF Hi-C data I've been using to define my TAD boundaries is a great resource, but it's got a resolution limit of 40 kb. We may be able to refine that, which could tell us whether TAD boundaries are really as stable and universal as people assert that they are. Another thing I'm working on is pushing out from the local area and into broader gene networks. We know that alterations to individual epigenetic factors can produce massive regulatory effects with visible phenotypes, but can we see the same thing with these interactions? If our data suggests we can, we'll attempt to verify this with an allele swap experiment at an appropriate target. So, that's the quick and dirty run-through of the project. As I said before, I'll be available at the Q&A session, and I'm available at lauren.kufler@jax.org. Thanks.